Krabs couldn't clear. Held in Sergachev at the right point. Sergachev. Shoot, score! Stamkos left circle. Left point Hedman. Right point Sergachev. Sergachev. Shoot, score!
Same thing.
Another goal for Sergachev. It's 2-1 Lightning with 1:50 left in the third. All right. Welcome back. Friday Habs Lunch. You want to take a shot at that? Sergachev scores.
Well, I know that Gallo could get a job in the NHL, and he has one game experience after listening to that.
The machine, Sean Campbell, is here after being in Calgary last night. Mitch Gallo is here. Mitch Melnick with you. And a very special in-studio guest. He's here all day. He's here all weekend. He might be here all year, Aaron Ward.
He might never make it back. They might not allow him back in the condition he's in.
Welcome. This is your first appearance in our newer studio.
Yeah, I appreciate Campbell showing up in suit and tie for the occasion. I'm glad he's honoring my virgin experience on Habs Lunch.
I take casual Friday to the next level.
That's not casual.
That's
I don't even think Gallo owns a tie, does he?
I saw you wore one on Wednesday.
Yeah, I had to do the game like Campbell is tonight, so full suit on Wednesday.
So this play-by-play, I'm going to have to go back and unearth the tape just so I can hear exactly what got said and how it got said.
Well, like Campbell said, I believe already I am better than Dave Mishkin.
Wow. He's calling
Campbell
the shot.
Campbell handles the puck to Schuteman. Schuteman takes it behind his own net, spins around, gains some speed, but turns it over. That's not a good place to turn the puck over right there. Passing play, fires, scores. Just like that, Nathan Todd has the goal. And we have a 1-1 game. Springfield is on the board.
I can listen to that voice. I mean, if
it's not bad for his first ever play-by-play assignment.
No, if Jack Edwards is employed, Gallo should definitely have a job.
Harvey Pinard on the forecheck. Good hit on cross behind the net. Belzile. And so we have a couple players, including James Neal, get tangled up. Nikku now on the left side. One-timer! Harvey Pinard shoots and scores! Raphael Harvey Pinard with a rocket!
That's a really good call.
I like that. With a rocket? For the Laval Rocket.
No pun intended?
Well done, Mitchie.
Were you planning that for their first goal?
No, completely unintentional. And I was thinking about a cheesy Harvey Pinard call. It was going to be like HP, Prince's name on the score sheet, but then I decided the canned calls. I'll leave those to the professionals.
Well, speaking of professionals, I thought Andy Bennett was going to be part of this today. She's in the building.
She still can be. She's just, I think, waiting for her computer to boot up.
Okay. Luca's here. Luca Scott, how you doing? And apparently Eric Macromella is with us. Eric?
Man.
Huh? What?
My man.
Yes, Eric. Who's my man?
You guys are all my men. You know, listen to Aaron Ward. I remember years ago during the NHL lockout when I was covering that, when I started doing this media stuff, chiefly for free, I got a message at Gallagher's Law Firm from the reception. She said, Aaron Ward just called for you. And she handed me a note. It was Aaron, E-R-I-N. I'm like, I think that's the former hockey player looking to chat lockout.
Well, that's my alter ego. If you look up the ERIN Ward, that's my burner account. I called under my burner account.
How many current or former players do you think have those burner accounts? Anybody?
Well, I have one that we know about, but it's all for fun.
There's nothing nefarious.
Yeah,
about
yeah.
It.
But I am rapidly learning that players and media members have little burner accounts, and I think when you start to read them, you can understand who they are and who they go after.
I think if I have three burner accounts, probably every NHL player has at least one.
You have three burner accounts?
Yeah.
You do? No, you don't. Do you really?
Yeah. Well, got to figure it out now, eh?
So I know Kevin Durant has a multitude of them. I just don't. How do you manage it? Like, who are you that day? Do you choose your burner account based on your mood?
Personality. They each have their own personality.
How do you not screw it up? Like, I'm not capable of... I can't manage my day-to-day. You start adding multiple personalities on social media, I'm done. I'm cooked.
Wow, are you... So you're like the Sybil of Montreal media?
Sybil.
Do you get the reference?
I got the reference.
Okay. Gallo needs some help, which is okay. The movie came out a long time ago.
Right over my head.
Yeah, multi-personality.
Not in a good way.
See, Eminem would have been my reference for... multiple personalities.
Yeah. But Sybil got the required chuckle.
Yep.
Mitch, you have one?
No. Long time ago, we used to have fun creating them, but I was always just so afraid that I would be logged into my personal account and think I'm on the burner account and then tweet something on my personal account that I thought was intended for the burner account. So I was like, no burner account. Can't do it.
Oh. I don't have the time. How do you possibly have the time?
It's because my personality is the same for all of them.
Well, I think Kevin Durant's made it acceptable. I mean, the fact that he's come out and been busted now, I think, is just a foregone conclusion that most people have them, and that they, you know, you get your frustrations out on your one burner account and you say something pertinent with the other one. So,
let's get to the game last night. That was like, I know Campbell apparently has Scoop Gallo's poll for Friday. You kind of took that theme about why it seems Montreal Canadiens fans not only don't want to see Tampa Bay win, they despise them.
Oh, were you going to do that, Mitch?
Because Aaron and I were talking about it yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And, you didn't listen to the show?
I did. I listened to a lot of the show. But my memory got erased when I was on a plane for a red eye.
On the red eye.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, this is a question. It was probably from yesterday that I just stole it.
No, you know what? Mine was going to be a poll, though.
Okay.
And it was going to be, which team do you least want to see win the Stanley Cup of the remaining teams? And to me, Tampa Bay Lightning, for Montreal Canadiens fans, I think it goes Toronto number one on the hate list, Boston number two on the hate list, and now a toss-up between Ottawa and Tampa Bay number three on the hate list.
Oh, I think it's Tampa Bay number three, and yeah. I think Ottawa's battling Carolina at number four.
Carolina's pretty high.
Ottawa, Eric, do you take that personally?
I take nothing personally about Ottawa. I've been here for 23 years. It tends to close very early. I'm the only person walking around at 10:30 at night, so nothing here about Ottawa bothers me.
Why is Ottawa on that list? I mean, proximity, maybe, but...
Well, I think since Brady Tkachuk's arrival, there's an added element. The Canadiens taking Kotkaniemi instead of Tkachuk. You know, there's a lot of intensity, even in a so-called meaningless game in February between the Canadiens and the Senators.
There was the Eller thing, the bug-eyed walrus, this number 61, and that a little bit of...
I would have thought Colorado, former Quebec Nordiques, would weigh for the older generation, the demographic that still remembers that type of...
No, that's like the Expos and the Washington Nationals. It's not even the same team.
It's like, and also, we only see them twice a year, and there's been no playoffs.
Yeah, but aren't people housing resentment still that the Nordiques are gone and they don't like them and now they're sitting pretty and mile high?
No.
Okay.
I have none of that.
See?
Do you guys have any of that? I never even connected, other than I know that historically that's what happened. I have no, there's no connection for me when I see Colorado that used to be the Nordiques.
Well, rest his soul, but didn't Guy going to the Nordiques have some impact on how people viewed, like, how
no,
dare
I,
you
I
do this?
No, I think those of us who were around, that we it was great to see him play in the NHL again.
Okay.
It didn't matter that it was with Quebec at that point. Because we know it wasn't him. It was Jacques Lemaire that kind of forced him away from the Canadiens, not the Canadiens.
Watching the Battle of Alberta made me miss the Quebec Nordiques, though. That definitely happened for me. When I was watching the Battle of Alberta, I said, I really want the Nordiques.
Here's the thing, though. If they do, in fact, one day put a team in Quebec, can you remanufacture that hatred? Do they come back as the Quebec Nordiques? Can you find that investment, right?
Because
yep.
All right.
As soon as they meet in the playoffs.
That would be tough for me to just fake it, to have an arch rival and say, okay, well, they're back again, so I'm going to feel this way again. There'd have to be someone on that. I mean, unless you're putting Sean Avery back in the Nordiques and everybody's pissed off at him, I don't see it happening for a very long time, and you'd have to educate the younger crowd in Montreal as to what that really means to hate the Nordiques.
It was crazy in the 80s. It extended to media.
I lived in Ottawa. We had fights in school over the one kid that wore a Nordiques shirt to school. In middle school, he got the crap kicked out of him because he had it on, and I didn't understand it. And as I grew up and got older, there's like an investment from families in these teams. So
they're never coming back, though, unfortunately.
Well, I don't know about never. It depends.
Expansion is going to go Kansas City, Houston, Europe.
Yeah.
Europe.
Oh, I think eventually we will see a European.
You said Kansas City, not Oklahoma City?
I said Kansas City.
I thought OKC Houston. Was also one
Houston.
That was...
Well, Houston was the other team.
I think as long as Bettman has got anything to say about it, there won't be a team in Quebec. As long as Peladeau's got anything to do with it, there won't be a team in Quebec. So that those are two factors there, and there are people who don't want to hear that, but that's the reality of the situation.
And maybe Eric knows, but maybe it's a little bit closer. What are the Melnick kids going to do with the team? Eugene Melnick passes away. I know that they're very young. They say the right things. They want to keep that team. To me, that's the only move to Quebec City is if Ottawa can't keep their team.
Yeah, well, first, I think it's unlikely that Quebec City gets a team. It'd be like moving an NFL team today to Green Bay. While there's a team there now, and you can do that in the NFL by way of their centralized revenue model, there's no way that the NHL would park a team in a small market like Quebec when the fourth largest metropolitan market in the U.S., namely Houston, has no hockey team, has an NHL-ready owner, has an NHL-ready arena. They're 10th in GDP. I mean, that's where the NHL would go next in all likelihood, and that is Houston. Quebec is at the bottom of the list, I think. And as far as the Sens go, the two daughters have said that they want to maintain ownership of the team, but they haven't defined ownership. That team is saddled with significant debt. I think it's valued at about $550 million, about $250 million that is debt. There are a lot of people in Ottawa with a lot of money, believe it or not, that want to buy this team. And there have been rumblings now for years. And now that Melnick has passed away, those rumblings seem to be gaining traction. I wouldn't be surprised if the two daughters held on to a minority stake, but someone else stepped in to grab the majority ownership of that team.
Why do I hear what you just said in perpetuity for the rest of the history of this radio station? I hear that audio. You get it, right? Gallo is nodding.
Mitch over here has the same name as the person you were talking about.
Now that Melnick has passed away.
Yes. I'm so sorry.
I can hear
Mitch.
It.
I'm really
I can
sorry.
Hear it. That's a why.
The kids are
I'm
in charge.
ICK. We're coming right back. We'll talk about a little bit more about yet another impressive come-from-behind win for the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are on the verge of advancing to the Stanley Cup Final for the third consecutive season.
Feels like Tampa's in full control, because they probably are, but it's 2-2.
That was Mike Johnson yesterday. It certainly had that feeling, right? Even though they were going into MSG, the Tampa had regained control of what was an even series until last night. Welcome back. It's Friday Habs Lunch. Mitch Melnick, Sean Campbell, believe it or not, has made it back in studio after calling the Owls last-minute loss to Calgary last night. Mitch Gallo is here, Lucas Scott, Andy Bennett in training. Eric Macromalla via remote from his home base in the Ottawa area and from the Ottawa area originally. Well, not and that's not true. He's from
no,
he
that's
born
the,
in Windsor.
The opposite of actually being true. I'm actually from Montreal. I moved here to work. But the question I have for you, Mitch, is there anybody at TSN 690 currently not on this show?
Yeah, that would be Sean Starr, who, by the way, nailed it on the over/under as you pointed out yesterday.
Yes, he did.
We need a microphone for Aaron.
Am I hot? Check. No, she's joking. Yeah, actually, that was the, I thought it was a no-brainer. I heard the lead-in when the advertisement came on. And I thought that he was dead on when it came to talking about the under. Vasilevsky regaining his composure and being who he is. And yeah, so again, I don't gamble anymore, but had I placed money in anything, I would have gone there.
I was listening because you thought it was me.
I did. Well, I was so confused. I know. Yeah. I will tell you this. I was a little out of sorts. Like I said, I went through a traumatic experience of basically being fearful I was getting a rectal exam in the Border Patrol area at Trudeau Airport. It managed not to happen.
Is that after or before you said you showed up for fun?
For fun. It was after. Like I said, when I went down that one line they sent me on, I thought, good Lord, here we go. So I was a little out of sorts trying to sit down and regain my composure because Mitch Melnick knows that if I'm distracted, I'm useless in many ways.
You have that condition, right?
Yeah, I have ADD, yes.
Yeah. And by the way, Eric, I wasn't suggesting you were originally from Ottawa. I was trying to intro Aaron by saying he was originally from Ottawa, but then I remembered he's actually from Windsor.
No.
Well, yeah, well, born in Windsor, moved to Ottawa when I was four, so they're from like 77 to 1990. I'm a James Duthie High School product also, Gloucester High School.
Oh, there you go.
Jimmy was definitely like a Flock of Seagulls kind of look when I was in high school. I think he might have been a senior when I was a freshman.
Yeah. All right, so what about is it over? Do you think it's over?
I do think it's over. Called it yesterday. If they win in Madison Square, this for me, the Vasilevsky story is one, but the fact that that Tampa has juggled the lineup and got Hagel, Cirelli, and Killorn on a line to shut down Panarin's line and Zibanejad is the story for me now. It's that Cooper has figured out from a player personnel standpoint how to counter whatever New York was doing to them. So I don't feel as though this New York Rangers team has a continuity in that locker room right now to recover at this stage of a playoffs. And Vasilevsky is now going to backstop Tampa and all the mistakes they're possibly going to make in a game. So, yeah, at home in Tampa, I don't give them much hope.
I'm pretty much with you. I mean, if I'm the Rangers, though, the way I look at last game is we are one shot away from winning. And that shot could have very well been the pass by Kopp to Strom. Strom doesn't get the handle on it and misses. And that could have been the game winner. Instead, it ends up going to Tampa Bay. But what I wanted to ask Aaron about is since the beginning of the series, we've seen it's clear the Tampa Bay Lightning want to crash in on Shesterkin and make his life miserable. And you saw the two goals that went in yesterday. The point shot from Sergachev, the first one, Corey Perry is standing right in front of Shesterkin. And then the second one, there's two players, and they've actually been doing this. They plant one in front, and then they'll have another guy fly through the front of the net area as the shot is coming in. So there's multiple bodies. Sergachev takes the shot, and it's Palat. It hits his knee and goes in. When you played, it was miserable to go to the front of the net. Like, the Holmstroms and the Ryan Smiths of the world really paid the price to stand there. At what point did hockey switch and the front of the net became free space for the forward and the defenseman started being instructed not to cross-check, hack, and that quote-unquote battle that the referees used to let you get away with?
So when the box out became interference, and that's really where hockey's kind of evolved, right? You're trying to give the skill guys an opportunity to play the game the right way. And I agree with it, but my era was you kind of stood to the post, lined yourself up, and waited for someone to come across that vulnerable area, and you basically cross-checked them and prevented them from getting that area. The hardest thing for a goalie is movement. It's not necessarily one guy being stagnant, because if you're stagnant, you can at least evaluate where the guy is and tilt your head. You see all these videos cut where a goalie's, you know, bending down, got his head almost at knee level trying to find the puck. It's when the motion comes across and you can't estimate whether or not the guy's going to get a body in the way, a stick on it. That's what goalies complain most about, and I think that's what Tampa has done. So there was, I think on the second goal, there was a high screen. So Shesterkin, I don't even think he saw the puck released. But by the time it got to the slot, there was three or four other guys. And I think that is a testimony to maybe what Tampa has seen, that when you crash the net, Shesterkin's got that personality, right? So the waving to the Pittsburgh fans, the going back in Carolina to the guys that were giving him grief along the glass and making sure he closed out that series by giving him the high five, like, enjoy your summer. I think there's a personality there that maybe Tampa's capitalizing on, knowing that if you get this guy engaged, maybe that's a way to distract him from his focus of being a Vezina Trophy goalie that he has been all year.
All right, we got to do some business and then come back. But before we do, with Sean taking the red eye back, the worst or best experience you ever had on a red eye?
Oh, good Lord. We actually fell out of the sky. We were taking a red eye from L.A. It was a charter. We had just played L.A., so technically it's a red eye. We're going up to Vancouver, and we're all sleeping, and we're on the Detroit Tigers plane. We shared it with them. And all of a sudden, the nose dove, and I started hearing screaming, and we dropped about 9,000 feet in a matter of seconds, and out of the sky. So one of our engines died, and then when we flattened out, I could only see the head of Slava Kozlov screaming at the front. He was sitting up front, but he wasn't actually sitting anymore. Now he's in a panic, like he's going to do something about this in midair, like he's somehow going to fix the plane. Then we hard tilted to the left because our next engine went out. When the other one re-engaged, they feathered the engine and we dropped more. So that was the quietest red eye you've ever. The guys were like white knuckling it, just waiting for the next thing to come.
That's a nightmare. You had an issue last night?
No, it was
just
fine.
Turbulence.
No, just a little bit that they delayed the bringing out the food. I mean, it was not even. I mean,
okay.
I'm sure Slava could have fixed that.
Yeah, he could have.
I think Slava could have fixed that one.
Coming right back. Don't go anywhere.
Oh! it no more, cause they took my jaw. I don't like it no more, cause they took my jaw. They took my jaw, I want it back. They took my jaw,
greatest soul singer on the planet right there. Thank you, Andy Bennett. The Andy Bennett influence already being felt. It is Friday Habs lunch. That's Betty Levette singing for Gerard Gallant, it seems, and the New York Rangers. In the studio, around the table in the studio, Melnick, Campbell, Gallo, Aaron Ward, Eric Makromala in Ottawa. And the reason Aaron Ward is in town is basically it comes from you guys, right? Campbell and Gallo.
Yes, so Campbell and I had a couple beers launched over the past year and a half. We started with the Campbell Play-by-Play IPA and the Angry Gallo Ale. Then we had a joint beer where we fused the two ideas together, had an IPA that was coffee. And now we have the post-game pints, which was released 2 weeks ago. And Aaron loved the idea of having personal beer so much that he reached out and wanted to do something. So I set him up with the guys from LaBrosse, and now Wardo here has his own beer too.
So truth, here's the truth. We always reference on the show that Gallo's like my little brother with 22 chromosomes, though. so I was kind of jealous a little bit. So I was like, okay, well, if Gallo's got a beer, I want to investigate this. So I kind of threw my name in the hat. I threw out there, like, I'd do that. And then as we started talking, we went with something that would be appropriately Aaron Ward, which would be jalapeno. I love spicy food, and I just like jalapenos, I can be a shock to the system when you meet me at first. So I think symbolically it's me in a can.
I love it, and I know that it's – and I know that people – you know, tried it, and they're like, oh, it's good. I could have one. I can have multiple. I am a big fan of that beer.
So I was telling these guys, I got beer sent down to Raleigh, and I brought it to one of the main guys, owns a conglomerate, Raleigh Beer Garden, Charlotte Beer Garden, and gave it to their buyer, and he had it and loved it. And I was showing him the review on one of the apps. So, and I mean, I love it too. It's right up my alley. So, yeah, I don't know how you can stop with one. I mean, if it's anything like our night last night with Mitch and I, our full night, if I'm drinking beer like I'm drinking bourbon, I'm in trouble.
Thank you to Maury and the staff at Burger Bar Crescent and, of course, Rod at Hurley's Irish Pub. So tonight, what's happening tonight?
We are having basically the beer launch event. So heading out to LaBrosse in, correct me if I'm wrong, Pointe Claire.
Yep. Hometown, baby.
Okay, Pointe Claire. There is beer there. We are going to mingle. I threw it out there on radio and people laughed. If you take an issue with anything I've done over the last 6 or 7 years in this radio show, be happy to meet you all and have a conversation. Otherwise, like I said, I'll be with the mayor of Montreal, Mitch Melnick. We've convinced him to come, and we'll be consuming.
Now, you're going to tell some stories that you might not necessarily tell on the radio, and you have a wide net to work with us.
Yeah, I got into it last night, right?
So I would urge you to try to tell the Mark Bergevin story that you told me last night, right now.
So the funny part was the funny part for me is I'm sitting on radio and Bergie's the GM of the Montreal Canadiens. So for me, I'm like, wow, okay, that's like he holds himself to a very high level. He's very secretive. He's got this air about him as a GM that I honestly don't recognize because I had him as a teammate when I was younger. I was much younger. And the one that sticks out in my mind is like he's just a off-the-cuff funny guy, great sense of humor, hilarious, and doesn't care. So the one I remember is we had this charity event in Detroit, and we had to return our tuxedos. And so the day we're bringing our tuxedos back, we have to go to practice. So everybody's hanging their tuxedos. And out comes Bergie in his underwear, yanked up high, and his bow tie on. And he's walking around, and if you remember, if you ever seen a picture of the Detroit Red Wings locker room, we had our stalls, and you had these miniature, like, bar stools that were maybe, like, 2 feet off the ground. So he had his bow tie on, his underwear, exactly as it described, and he was walking around with the stool giving lap dances. Not actual lap dances, but table dances to the guys before practice, and the first guy he wheels up to is Steve Yzerman's locker, and I about crapped myself. Like, I was, like, 20-something. I'm like, no one told me this was the National Hockey League. I swear to God, I thought this was supposed to be serious, but that's who Bergie was. He was funny. It was like he had the accent going, and it was just hilarious. So to see him as GM, I'm like, that is not the guy I remember. I remember bow tie, button your face of my captain guy.
Go ahead, Eric.
Speechless?
Who, me?
Yeah, speechless.
Who, me? I have nothing to say. I'm at home busy making love to my wife. She has a very strict rule. If I come home from work early, I have to make love to her. And I got to tell you, it does slow us down when I'm taking the kids to baseball practice.
The reason that story came up is we were talking about Bergevin's background as a working class guy from the Point, basically a working class NHL player for almost 20 years, played everywhere, so many teammates, kept things loose. And after a pretty good start as GM, it just his I don't know if the fact that he was a rookie GM, but the personality, I mean, he became this, he became a completely different person, it seemed.
Mm-hmm. Seemed like he was removed.
Yeah, and the job just wore him down and out. And it's a shame. I'm not talking about the job he did as general manager in terms of signings and trades and all that. I'm talking about his personality. He became
withdrawn,
withdrawn and almost above it all.
Yeah, you know? and so having been at TSN and seeing how the operation works. So sitting with Bob McKenzie and sitting with Darren Drager, there's a certain level of interaction between organizations, GMs, and all those people that occur. And we're not kidding ourselves. Like, this is the leakiest league in all of sports. Like, the NHL, if something is out there, it gets out there. Berge was not that guy. Like, he was actually one of the guys they referenced was the toughest nut to crack, to get anything. And I think it didn't serve the Montreal Canadiens well, because at times when you needed, like, a PR boost or help in some capacity.
Even some background info, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it just didn't come across. The relationship wasn't there. And people acknowledged, like, Berge became, like, compartmentalized is kind of the word. He tried to control everything. I couldn't even talk to former teammates. They wouldn't return phone calls. Well, they probably hated me to begin with because I was an idiot, but they would hide behind it then. But Berge had people running scared within the organization that if you were even thought to be the leak, you'd be handled. And so I had a ton of guys that I thought I was friends with that would not have a conversation about hockey with me ever. Involving the Montreal Canadiens.
But at the same time, just to play devil's advocate a little bit here, aren't the most successful teams run in the way that Bergevin was trying to run the Canadiens, with the organization being a vault as far as information is concerned? Like, really, the top of the list right now with teams that don't let any information out is the New York Islanders, and we know the success that Lou Lamoriello has had as a GM. And I would say number two right after Lamoriello is Steve Yzerman, your former teammate, Aaron. Nothing comes out of Detroit and nothing came out of Tampa Bay when Yzerman was there. So I just look at how teams that are successful run their business. And this is not just hockey, by the way. We could go to other sports with the New England Patriots or the New York Yankees, et cetera, et cetera. Teams that are at the top usually don't let a lot of information about their team.
I'll debate that. Because as you mentioned, Lou Lamoriello, strategically, he leaks things. So most teams, you just assume it's coming from the top. They found ways to get things out without having it coming from those specific people. So where you think, oh, that was like a low-level leak, everything is strategically placed with those people. So I would say when Lou wants something out, Lou gets it out. I would say Toronto, especially in Toronto. Lou is in Toronto. That place was not a vault. If that's the definition of a vault, I want to... like, yeah, no. And the Yzerman... Steve is the same way. Like, when he was in Tampa, there were people below him you could get information from. You just wouldn't get it from Steve. And I understand that he would control the message, but these guys still have things leak out. There's a benefit. Like, there's a learning process of, like, if a team wants something to be known to a free agent or an agent, they pop it out there. They utilize. It's a mutually beneficial relationship between McKenzie, Drager, and teams.
All right, so let me bring it to the Canadiens' new front office. Has there been a misstep yet?
Well, they haven't really had to sign anybody. They haven't had to do anything hard. This organization, this summer, the next calendar year, is going to be hard. They have to fix the cap. They're going to have to trade players that they're going to have to throw a little incentive. This is where these missteps are going to happen. Maybe they'll get rid of a player a little bit too early. Maybe one of the missteps in a year or two from now, you'll talk about how Justin Barron's not in the NHL and Arturi Lehkonen has two Stanley Cups. And that, like, right now, it doesn't look like there's any missteps, but you still have to evaluate what he's done through time.
I think the only evaluation process
is the hard part yet, guys.
Go ahead.
This isn't the hard part yet.
Right.
You know, right now there hasn't been any heavy lifting. The moves that Hughes and Cordon have made have been pretty self-evident and pretty obvious moves to make. The heavy lifting comes in the summer and over the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, you got contracts like Gallagher, Armia, Price, Dvorak, Hoffman. And there's a lot of work to be done here from the standpoint of viable and sustainable roster construction. And the Canadians are far from that right now.
I think the only thing we can actually scrutinize is, and it's still too early, is was there more that can be done to get rid of certain players at the trade deadline? That's the only area we can look at. And we don't really know until season end when all the teams get out and we get into the summer what was possibly offered, what was available to them to move.
But in terms of setting a tone, a new direction, establishing a new front office, you know, one guy who's got a good track record, the other guy who's brand new, but a good rep as an agent, and coming in and saying, okay, this is who we are, this is who we want to be. And yes, some of the moves are obvious, but you still got to make them. You can't penalize them because they're making obvious moves. I mean,
it's tough to criticize anything right now.
Yeah,
it really is. I think maybe they could have got more for Kulak with the way that he played in Edmonton.
Well, maybe he comes back here.
I think one of the... You're smiling.
Are
you saying that facetiously or what? Because I wasn't personally a big Kulak fan. I'll say this. I do give them props for the way that they've assembled their management group. You have this arrogancy in the National Hockey League that exists when someone comes in, like they know everything, they have all the answers. I think the fact that they've assembled a group of people and they're still going through the process, that they're understanding, they need all kinds of opinions. They're open to any parts of the process. And I think Montreal has been pretty reserved about how they have stated their direction and their practice is going to be.
All right. Anything you want to add there, Mitch?
I mean, it's too early really to give an evaluation on them. You know what? You talk about missteps. That first overall pick is going to be very, very interesting because that could be the first misstep.
Yeah, we'll be there. A reminder, we're going to be set up at the hotel headquarters the day before the draft on, Wednesday, July the 6th, and, of course, on the draft floor on the 7th. Welcome aboard, Andy Bennett. We're coming right back. We'll get to the Alouettes last night and the Laval Rocket tonight. Next. Maybe in Memphis I'd find joy. Maybe in Memphis I'd find joy.
They say love is more precious than gold. It can't be bought and it can't be sold. I got love enough to spare that makes me a millionaire.
This is an Aaron Ward selection. Actually inspired by Mitch Gallo saying, please play, if you're going to play a Stapleton song, not the one that we play every day at 5:05, starting over. With Aaron Ward, our special in-studio guest on the final segment of Friday Habs Lunch. We're going to switch gears a little bit. Mitch Melnick, Mitch Gallo, Sean Campbell, Lucas Scott, Andy Bennett, whose first official day on Melnick in the Afternoon will be Monday, June the 20th. So she's got a little bit to learn, but we're so looking forward to having her with us every day. And we got the Laval Rocket tonight and the Montreal Alouettes last night.
In the third quarter, Al's up by 4. First down, it's Vernon Adams Jr. down towards Eugene Lewis at the sidelines, and he makes the grab all the way at the Stampeder 33. That's the chemistry that we've been looking for between those two.
What happened down the stretch?
The Alouettes' offense dried up in the second half, and they had a 10-point lead at halftime. They really had a good final 3 minutes of the first half. They had the interception. They scored a field goal, interception, touchdown, got in the end zone, felt good. And then in the third quarter, they just didn't get anything going. A bad turnover from Vernon Adams Jr., and they let the Stampeders get back into the game with the late field goal, and the Owls had one last Hail Mary attempt that they couldn't come down with. It was almost a dramatic finish, but
Watching the game this morning, it reminded me a little bit of the Tampa New York game last night, where the Alouettes were right there, like the Rangers were right there, but lost the game, and so they had a chance. I thought Vernon Adams Jr. at Campbell looked pretty good. He made just that one glaring mistake that you referenced. But other than that, he was pretty flawless. To me, the big story now with the Alouettes moving forward is the injuries. Will Stanback, that didn't look good at all. And I know he tweeted, right, about the injury?
Yeah, he just said, thanks for all the love. He did it just at the end of the game.
He was carted off. Greg Reed went down, too, and never came back. So just, I look at already game one, and you're losing significant players. That could be hard to overcome early in a season.
Yeah, one on offense, Will Stanback, and no word just yet, and they're hoping it's not a fracture. But if it's a high ankle sprain, you know how long that could take, and you're a running back. And then you mentioned Greg Reed, one of their top defensive backs, and Mario Alford, their dynamic returner. He did one return, and then he was
done. And
that
sucks because he was hurt all of last year, too.
Yeah, I know.
So, well, and if you're in the National Hockey League and you have a high ankle sprain, all you do is pick up 2 points per game for the whole playoff run.
Well, I don't know if Will Stanback is Leon Draisaitl.
Eric Macromella in Ottawa. How close to the Alouettes or not are the Red Blacks?
How close, you mean, are they friendly?
Paul Apollice is friendly with everybody, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. You know what, though? I will tell you this. There is probably no better place to watch a CFL game than in Ottawa. They redid that stadium at Lansdowne, and it's an absolute party every time you go.
I do enjoy that stadium. It's really nice. The one time I hated the stadium was the Heritage Classic. The temperature was the worst in the world. That was the game that ended Shea Weber, by the way.
It was not the worst in the world.
Oh, it was bad.
No, it wasn't.
Ask Simon Salikas.
No, not Simon. Sergio Momesso turned into the Emperor from Star Wars.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm told Jimmy Buffett is going to be playing a week-long series of concerts in Antarctica. So I think that might have been colder.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. All right, the Laval Rocket tonight.
It's going to be a big one for the Rocket. They're going to need to figure out a way to stay out of the penalty box. They gave Springfield 8 power plays. They didn't score on the power plays, but that's just time that you're not producing offense. And that's pretty much what happened to the Rocket in Game 3. I was listening to Mitch Gallo and JP, so I'm looking forward to having my poutine tonight with JP before the game.
Okay, final for now. Go ahead, sell job tonight.
Well, yeah, since this is being played again a little bit later, please come out to LaBrosse just off St. John's in Pointe Claire. You're going to have a great time. Aaron Ward here is going to tell you stories and drink a lot of beer.
Let's hopefully, temper the stories down. I will tell the story about pissing in the coach's gas tank for sure, but beyond that, I can't guarantee where else I go.
The coaches? Or you mean Scotty's?
Give it away yet.
Okay.
All right. I also make a promise that I won't do what I did to Melnick last night in basically turning the drinking into a challenge.
Yeah, he called me a quitter.
Yeah. Oh. And yeah.
Is there a worse thing you could say to somebody?
Well, there's...
You're soft.
Soft is worse than
at
being
playoff
a quitter.
Playoff time, you're soft.
Thing, you yeah. can't quit
I'll
drinking...
I'll Gallant to call this team soft early in the playoffs.
That's right.
You can't quit drinking whiskey while the Celtic, Maritime, / whatever music's playing. I couldn't have it. So, I paid for it this morning. I'm sweating it out.
I hope you're in one piece by the time you get on the plane back to Carolina. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, guys.